time for Lickin' on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Listeners, I'm excited to have someone who is emerging on the scene. Now, he's been around for a while, but he's emerging on the scene, making a lot of noise. And I am excited to have Greg Scher joining us on this podcast today. Greg, welcome to the podcast. I am really excited to have you on the podcast today because you are really out there stirring the pot, making some noise. And I mean that in a respectful way, having a voice heard. We've been missing a voice. David Stevens passed away, and he was such an iconic voice for our industry in many ways. And one of the posts that you put out there, Greg, that really spoke to me is you were saying different ones. Casey Crawford, are you going to step up? We need to have a voice for our industry. What I love about you is you boldly stepped into that. But you've been doing this for a while. It's in your genetics. That's what I love about your story. So let's start there. Tell us about your story. And I'm really wanting to get in about how instrumental your dad was and launching Oprah. So tell us a little about your story, your background, how you got into lending.
I grew up the son of a broadcaster, a television newsman out of Baltimore. My father, Richard Scher, who is still alive today, thank goodness, 82 and going strong. He was on an ABC affiliate in Baltimore for 37 years. So ever since I can remember anything, I was in studios watching him do his thing on live TV, watching newscasts, sportscasts, weathermen do their thing. You know, I knew about the green screen many years ago. And so I grew up in that environment and really wanted to follow in his footsteps. And I actually did. My first job out of college was as a sports broadcaster, working for a national radio network called Prime Sports Radio. Yeah. I packed up my stuff at 24 years old and went down to Dallas, Texas. Got a
great
really
place
strong
to live.
It's a great place. Yep. I was living in Las Colinas and I was just a mile and a half from Valley Ranch. And I would go to Cowboys practice every day, including one of their championship years when Barry Switzer was there. I was in there interviewing Emmitt Smith and Troy Aikman and Michael Irvin and others, and really loved being a broadcaster. And after a year and a half there, I was recruited by my hometown big broadcasting outlet, WBAL Radio, which is a 50,000-watt station, the flagship of the Orioles and Ravens. At the time, the Cleveland Browns had moved to Baltimore and they needed someone to do their pre and post game shows. I already had my last name. Everyone knew it because my dad had been there for so many years already. Yeah. And I was already an apprentice. I was practicing and had been doing broadcasting related things in the local market since I was 16. So I moved back home. I became the sports director of this entity, WBAL Radio, at 26 years old. Very young age to have that important of a job.
No kidding.
And I actually failed pretty miserably. At the time, I got away with just winging it. I read every paper, but I didn't come in every newspaper, every sports section I could get my hands on, maybe 10 a day. But I didn't really write a lot of stuff down. I was not that organized with it. You can't appear in a big market like that and just wing it. And so I got some things wrong and I was demoted to a weekend guy. Fortunately, they were graceful. They didn't fire me. They just said, look, you're not ready yet. We're going to move you over to the weekends. And so I needed to find something to do during the week. And so I got into the mortgage business. A friend of mine was 23. He was making 75 grand a year, which seemed like an awful lot of money.
A lot of money back then.
And compared to what I was making as the sports director, which was 48 grand. So I took him up on the offer. I came in, I visited him. In those days, we had handwritten 1003s.
What year was that?
1997.
Oh, yeah. Yep, back in the handwritten days.
So I've been in the business ever since. You know, I was.
Now tell the story about your dad and Oprah, because that is a great story.
So Oprah was in Baltimore from 1975 to 1980. They co-hosted a talk show together called People Are Talking. You can Google it now and see so many pictures. He had very impressive hair. He had an afro, and so did she. So the two of them were very complimentary to one another. And they did great work together interviewing the who's who, the did the talk show circuits from 75 to 80. And she was discovered in 1980 by Quincy Jones, or actually might have been a year before. He was a guest on the show and he loved her, saw a lot of potential. And there was an opening at WLG in Chicago for a 30-minute local talk show. So they recruited her and she went and worked there, and the rest is history. Now she's one of the most famous people to ever walk the earth. They remain good friends.
That's so good.
And she's a wonderful person. She's very philanthropic, very generous, and the real deal. So that's how I got into the mortgage business. That's my story.
That's good. It's a great story. And when you've been in the mortgage industry since
1998.
And then you've gotten into the origination side of the business and you have excelled. You have done phenomenally well. What do you think has been the reason for your success in mortgages?
I started out as an originator, worked my way up to an executive level at the same company I'm with now, NFM. So NFM's been around 26 years. I started at NFM from 1998 to 2002, then opened up my own mortgage company, continued to originate until I had enough staff under me, and then grew my company to 120 employees. And then in 2009, I picked up my company and merged them with NFM. And I've been here ever since. It's been another 15 years in July since I came here. In terms of the success that I've had, I think a lot of people can relate to this. When you're at a larger company, the success you have really hinges a lot on the people you work with.
Yes,
and no quarterback was a great quarterback without a great offensive line. And we have a lot of quarterbacks. We have
a
lot
of great sportscaster. No, you've seen
that. We have a lot of great quarterbacks here. We have a lot of great linemen. There's a lot of tenure at this company. We work well together. We don't always get along. We don't always agree. Every day is a new day. It's a complicated business, which I know we'll get into.
I think as long as you're all going in the same direction, I think some healthy conflict is something that actually makes you stronger as an organization. In all my years of consulting and owning my own businesses, I look back on it and it's healthy conflict, not dysfunctional conflict, healthy conflict. And I was going to ask you, because we do a lot about leadership, and I'm really interested about that formula that you're talking about there. I want to get into really the thrust of why I wanted you to come on the podcast and what you're doing on social media and the comments you're making. But you touched on something that is significant. And that is that we don't always agree, but there's something about this group where we work well together. Identify what it is that continues to hold you together in spite of, at times, pretty strong conflict.
I think it has a lot to do with the character of the people and a certain level of humility and ability to look inward and to assess where you are. And I don't think any of our sides of the street are completely clean. And I think it takes a certain kind of human to recognize that we all have faults and to be willing to listen to criticism constructively or otherwise and constantly be working on ourselves. And I can say unequivocally that everyone on our leadership team that I work closely with day to day has got those attributes. And so when you're working with people who care deeply about others, who are all of the servant leadership mindset, amazing things happen.
It's so true. And we could spend a whole podcast just talking about leadership and what you're meaning there. But the reason I want you to come on the podcast is, first of all, I want to introduce my audience to you. Many of my audience already knows who you are because they're calling me. I had that happen to me this morning, Greg. He said, "Hey, I'm listening to this guy, Greg, who's on there talking," and they mispronounced your name because it's easier to do, like Lickin or Lycan, whatever my story. But I said, "Do you know this guy? Listen to him." And they forward me on and they wanted me to get me your thoughts. You're making a lot of noise out there. You're calling attention. One of the things I love about what you're posting is it's authentic, what you're feeling, seeing at the moment. It may not be appreciated by everyone who's reading it, especially some of the commentary you're putting out there. But what is the opportunity that you're seeing here, and what's motivating you to get involved and really have the impact that you're starting to have, Greg?
I think a lot of it has to do with Dave Stevens and the void he left, and the responsibility I feel as someone that felt like they were close to him professionally to carry on that legacy and to make sure that it's not in vain, all the hard work that he did, and that I do my part to speak up and to challenge myself to be better prepared and more organized. Going back to the beginning of this conversation, and no issues, and spend the time talking to others like you and so many other people that have put their arms around me in the last 6 months to a year. I have just been really inspired by not just the traction on the post, but by the depth of the relationships that I've been able to build. as a result of taking a chance and being brave and being bold. In no way do I want to be polarizing or a lightning rod. That is not my mission. It's not what I want to do. I don't want to alienate or anger anyone. What I want to do is just bring an authentic voice. And someone said to me earlier today, they hit me up offline and said, "You're saying all the things that people want to say but are afraid to, or want to say but don't have the courage to say." And all I'm doing is just revealing what I see and what I feel, and I'm trying to be as genuine. Well, a perfect example is a post that I authored regarding the UWM situation. And, you know, I work at a lender. I'm not a broker. Like, it doesn't behoove me for me to stick up for Matt Ishba or United Wholesale Mortgage. And it really doesn't. Like, this would be an opportune moment if I was agenda driven to pile on and say, yeah, brokers aren't better. What was that all about? That slogan about shopping a million places, and it was all a lie. Look at the stats. But that's not who I want to be or who I'm going to be. So instead, I looked at the data, I read a bunch of articles, and the true conclusion I came to is that I don't think they've done anything so horrible that the company should be shut down or that something earth-shattering is going to happen. And I stated that. I stated that the worst infraction was that the thing they're guilty the most of is being the best, working the hardest, having the hardest working boss, dominating market share because their back end is so good. This is a perfect study for what I'm talking about and the person I want to be, right? Is that even though it hurts me from a business standpoint to take that position, it's the right position to take.
Right,
and I felt it in my soul. And so I took the position. And that puts into context, I think, David, how I want to show up. And yeah, and if I ever irritate anyone or anyone wants to pull me up on the side, I respond to pretty much anyone that reaches out to me, and I'm open. And my goal isn't to put anybody down. There's enough people out there that do that every day. I just want to be one of many voices, and it's going to take a village to fill the void left by David.
And I'll put a shout out for Taylor Stork, who you and I are both mutually good friends with, and Taylor and I are coming to around you to help bring you more depth and knowledge about the industry and all aspects of it. And what's so wonderful about your attitude is you are willing to get out there, but you're so hungry to get the whole truth, the whole everything. It's the authenticity from which you're going out there boldly. And sometimes you're saying things that may not be popular. Like that one person said, you're saying things that many are feeling. And that's so important. It's also being important that it be done in a way that has the depth of knowledge and of all the issues, all aspects of it. I'm thrilled and honored to be invited into your circle that I get to be speaking into it as Taylor.
But the thing is, I sought you guys out.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do. I want listeners to know that is, you say, I know what I know, but I don't know what I don't know, and I need to find people. I've been in the industry for 50 years, and you found that out, and you found out my knowledge and the level I have, and you go, oh, my God, I need to make you my new best friend. And I saw you're hungry, and I see what you are doing and wanting to do for our industry, and that's my job. At 73 years old, 50 years in this, I want to find the next generation. You've got at least a good 15, 20 years in you. And so to be a great voice and influence in this industry. So it is an honor to partner with you, Greg, and to really see this voice of yours rise up in a way to have a big impact on our industry. We're looking for a leader. David is going to be missed. He was iconic. We've had different ones, and this industry is aging out like myself. I'm not going to be going away anytime soon, but I do want to find the next generation. And that's my job right now. Find the next generation leaders and pour into them like crazy.
Yeah, it's going to take a lot of us. It's not going to take one of us, because David was a generational figure. But if nothing else, what I'm hoping to accomplish and what I'm seeing in my threads, for anyone that follows me on LinkedIn, you can find me. I'm easy to find, Greg, is that the threads are very active and there are a lot of people commenting for the first time. And it takes courage, man. Like, not everybody has a broadcasting background. Not everyone's used to talking in front of cameras. Not everyone's used to saying how they feel. So I'm trying to create this safe zone And I monitor every single comment that's made, David, because I don't want anyone to get out.
I know, not only you monitor it, but you go in and post to it. Thank you so much. Thanks for your feedback.
Of course, I mean, no. And so I'm hoping
really,
that
you're
I'm
respecting
that
the people. It's not just putting it out there. You're respecting the people that are coming back and commenting. I think that's such a formula for success and leadership.
Well, I'm hoping that I give other people the courage so that we can have strength in numbers. And that is what I'm seeing right before my eyes. I'm already seeing people stand out. I have top of mind 8 to 10 people that I see that have leadership qualities, that have really intelligent, impactful, thoughtful things to bring to my threads. And those people I'm engaging with, hey, can we do a 30-minute call? Can I get to know you a little bit better? And so that's what I'm trying to build. I started the year saying that my thoughts on 2024, my word of the year was collaboration. And I'm loving executing on that.
I'm so glad that you're doing that and that you're open to receive feedback from so many. And that is really, I think, someone who can listen is the sign of a leadership, of a real leader in the marketplace. What are some of the issues that you're tracking right now that you think that have you fired up and that is generating a lot of feedback?
I think an easy one to point out is the NAR settlement and just how it's going to impact the pivot among mortgage lenders. And ironically, I just got off a call before I jumped on this one with our general counsel, just trying to figure out the best way to approach this. Some talk about loan officers getting real estate licenses. Some talk about agents getting loan officer licenses. What does that look like? What's the process like for the handoff? And concerned about the buyer's agent, but it represents a large number of the agents that are out there. And it's the 80-20 rule. A lot of them are just doing one or two deals a year. And now if they're going to be making less, which I think they will be, I think that we need to look out for the impact that's going to have on those people and those lives. But an even more paramount issue to me is the fact that first-time home buyers and underserved communities just continue to get pushed out farther and farther in the process. And it's a real big concern to me. I don't think that the NAR settlement and the aftermath is going to do them any favors. And I know there's a population of people out there that think that the fees are going to remain at 5.5% or so, and that the sellers are going to be ready to go with contributing to the buyer's agent. I call BS on that. A lot of everyone reads the news, right? People know what's going on. This is a very big deal. So if I'm selling a house and my listing agent has the nerve to tell me I need to cover the buyer, I'm going to say, you're out of your mind. You're fired. I know what's going on. I'm no longer responsible for that agent. In fact, if you want to stick around, I'm going to pay you 2% and go find me buyers that can afford to pay their agent on their own, because that's the new deal. And so what that does is it pushes the underserved. It pushes first-time home buyers. It pushes people that are already struggling to just scrounge together a 3.5% down payment, or in some cases, even less than that. You know, so that's a concern. I think that they'll obviously have to address the veteran component of this and the parts of it don't allow them to pay for a buyer's agent. They're not going to let this thing go through without that happening. So those are some issues that are very top of mind. And then all the infighting amongst IMBs really bothers me. Everyone's suing each other.
It has just gotten so freaking toxic what's going on. And when we start eating our own, that's a sign of what has been. We've got to be coming back. And I look at the type of activity where you see, and I've got clients suing clients. I'm advising as a coach and a consultant. I'm working with both companies and they're going at each other and they're trying to come and tell me that I shouldn't represent the other because of how nefarious the other party is. And you see both sides of it. I'm going, anyway, that's a good one to talk about just briefly.
What's a major problem? What started it was one particular company, I'm not a namer, I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus, and I actually respect this company immensely, but one particular company started writing some enormous checks and actually put the industry on notice and in a position where the only way to compete was to write checks that they were not comfortable with as well. So it started this energy where everybody felt like they, and NFM fell into it too. We wrote some huge checks. Believe me, we did, because as a result of this. So this thing started, this momentum started where everyone was writing these bigger checks. And when you're writing bigger checks to get producers, there's much more emotion on the line. There's much more risk. Suddenly you can write a $1 million check and not get any of it back. And I think that was the first thing that happened that led to this second stage of all the lawsuits, because you've got these companies that have taken people from one another. And it basically is like a game of musical chairs. at this point. And it all started with the checks that were written. And again, I will also tell you, they're being written once again. There's some companies out there, some new names that have emerged that are paying as high as 100 basis points for talent right now, between 50 and 100. And that's concerning to me because people end up leaving companies for the wrong reason. Oftentimes, it's not what they thought it would be. They end up completely trapped where they are. It's just a vicious, ugly cycle. And I wish that people would go back to making decisions about what lender they want to go to based on the things that really matter. What kind of culture do you have? What kind of leadership? Who's sitting across the table from you? Can you trust them? Maybe that sounds old school. Too many LOs are rented. What happened to stability and being at a company through ups and downs? That's how I feel about it. At the same time, I also feel like there's a large amount of people that leave companies because the companies made mistakes, because they weren't good listeners, because they didn't hear the concerns. And for me, anytime somebody leaves, unfortunately, we've not had a run on us ever. And I think that is indicative of what we've built. Of course, we've had people leave. But to us, when people leave, it's a moment of reflection. Where did we go wrong? We do an assessment of where we came up short, and any areas we feel like we can address, we do. And we're not afraid to admit that we made mistakes. We just try to not make them twice.
Yeah, that's a real compliment to you guys that you're going to lose some, but you guys have really held on. That's one of your reputations that I've found out in researching you. One of the reputations of NFM is you really hold on to your people. I've got several other clients. Alcova Mortgage rarely loses people because of the culture they created. Let's talk a little bit about that. One of the reasons you've stayed NFM since the beginning is one of the reasons that others are being attracted to you. Talk a little bit about that. Let's just go ahead and make this our unabashed why you should go to work for NFM.
Oh my goodness. I hate doing that, David. You're putting me in a bad spot. Believe it or not, even comfortable doing it. I don't do it on my posts. I rarely mention NFM. I'm not really comfortable.
I know that's one of the things I like about you, Greg, because I went back and was researching and I asked that question because I anticipated that answer. Because quite honestly, that's one of the things that drew me to you. Other than the fact that you're out there and being bold and saying things that others don't have the guts to say, you're out there saying them, but I don't see you self-promoting that, like you're the smartest guy in the room. You're just saying things that need to be said. And it's not self-promotion. It's just a lot of people say, how could it not be self-promotion? Do you see how much he's posting? You read what you're posting. It's not self-promotion.
People know how to reach me. If anybody ever wanted to talk to me about what I feel like makes us unique, but I'm not going to use this moment or LinkedIn or that vertical at all to brag about what we've done. To me, everyone's selling all the time, and there's not an executive in this industry that wouldn't love to tell you 10 or 20 great things about them. And truthfully, if you're around today, you are a great company, really. Like, you've stood the test of time. These are very troubling times. There's been a lot of consolidation, record consolidation. There's likely to be more based on the environment that we're in. And now there's some question as whether there'll even be a rate cut this year. I happen to think there will be. It's going to be June, July, even with the data that we're seeing, the unfavorable employment data that we saw today at record time, which I don't know when this is going to air. What I will say, and this is not necessarily about NFM, because I feel like there are a lot of companies that can say this, but this is one of the great things about NFM. We've been around a long time, 26 years. So we've stood the test of time. I'm proud to say, and that's all that is a fact. And that as an organization, we are a great size. So we did $6 billion last year. We're one of a handful or so of companies that are in that range. You've got quite a few companies that are well below. You've got many companies that are much bigger. What happens when you get much bigger is that in order to facilitate the company operationally, you've got to have layers. You just don't have a choice but to add regional types. And so we don't have any of that. So if you're at NFM, you're communicating with me every day. You're talking to our president and things like that. I do view that as a positive that I'm proud of. And we're not the only organization that can boast that. And some people want to be at a bigger place, and hats off to them. Some people want to be at a smaller place. But I'm really proud of the fact that we've been around as long as we have.
Yeah, that's a real statement, especially in this market. We're seeing a lot of companies fold up. What are the concerns you have for our industry? We talked about the National Association of Realtors settlement. You've already named the things that's frustrating you is the amount of companies suing each other at the independent mortgage level, IMB level. What is the other thing that you would say is the greatest concern you have as you look at our industry? That if you could fix, you would.
I just think the regulatory scrutiny, are we ever going to not have to pay the price for the financial crisis? We've been
We were
paying the
paying it for a
price for
while.
this. Yeah, we've been paying it now for 16 or 17 years. We are scrutinized to the umpteenth degree here. The commentary recently around discount points and the CFPB's position that they are closing costs. They're not closing costs, but consumers are paying down the rate on their own volition to finance less and have a lower payment. That's a choice that they get to make. It's a luxury if they can afford to make it. So it really scares the bejesus out of me that we have the CFPB looking at this in that way. Having said that, CFPB is very necessary. We need them around. That was in a previous post of mine, is we appreciate that they're here. We respect them and we fear them. That motivates us to always want to make sure that our I's are dotted, our T's are crossed. But it just doesn't feel like there are enough people around at the legislative level and the government level that understand the mortgage business. And that's the thing that David Stevens could do. It didn't matter how hot the fire got. He could always find his way to the right people to get his message across. And that scares me that we have that void right now. I'm not going to fill it. I'm not as astute as others, as Taylor, you, and so many others on how things politically work out there.
Yeah, but I think you said something earlier that's such a good point. It takes a community, and a community of us getting together to talk about the issues, discuss those issues, and then come to someone like yourself and that who can be out there with your ability to communicate so effectively and boldly. I love the boldness and the authenticity by which you are out there posting away. What are some of the things that you want to hear from people? When people are reading your posts, how can people best respond to you to really have the most meaningful impact?
Help me look at things from multiple sides. Help me see things that I'm not seeing right now. Articulate, hey, you looked at it this way, but have you ever thought of it like that? Anything that can expound upon a thought or an idea is what
thought.
I relish. That's what I relish.
Yeah. No, I've seen you invite that in response to those that even have written some things critical. You've written things on other posts and you actually challenged their point of view, but it was done respectfully and it was done in a manner that brought on a really healthy dialogue as a result of that. I encourage you to keep that up. We badly need voice in the industry. And I'm looking forward to more and more posts from you. I'm looking forward to having you on my podcast. When we see an issue rise up, I want to get a group of us on one of our podcasts, or we'll just jointly share it out through all of our various channels that exist, the issues that are out there. I want to invite others to get to know you, my audience, to get to know Greg. One of the things that I want to encourage, though, is people to get a hold of you and say, these are the things that are encouraged that I'm finding frustrating. These are issues, and to start creating a narrative that's out there that you can be that repository or the focal point which we start bringing things to.
But I want that. And then that happens now. I am getting that kind of feedback, and my inbox does get pinged with, hey, have you thought about this or this is going on? And I so appreciate that and welcome any dialogue. Obviously, I've got a journalism background, and so I understand.
Well, you're really good at researching the issues. One of the things I found when I brought some things to you and we were talking about this, you just said, hey, look, I don't know you, but I got to research this. And you dove into it and you came back. What you're saying scares the living crap out of me, but you're right. It's true. This is a real issue. And so
I don't want to go down that road, because if you brought that up with banks and commercial paper and warehouse lines and things that could. Look, you've been around long enough to know that nothing's impossible. And so I think that's what I appreciate about you so much is the wisdom that you bring, the experience that you bring, having seen this business in many great forms, but also some pretty ugly forms.
We talked about what concerns you. Now let's talk about what excites you, Greg.
What excites me is I know there's going to be a lot of innovating that comes out of this moment. A lot of really great thought leadership is going to come out of this moment. A lot of incredible ideas that are born from conference room tables and from the field. And I just can't wait to see how the industry navigates creatively around this moment in time where social media is so relevant, where agents are being challenged, and where pricing is being constrained, and companies have to find ways to innovate to keep their costs down. This is a real watershed moment for our industry. And we're going to see some incredible companies emerge from this that are already existing and in existence. But then the other part of what I'm excited about is to see who the next wave of leaders are, because they're out there building their companies today, brick by brick. I don't know who many of them are. And every one of these companies that are behemoths now started out very small with one or two people in their organization, and they built up to be the guaranteed rates or the cross countries or the NFMs. And I just am so excited to meet the future leaders. I really am. And I'm often asking people who they are. And I've looked the people up and communicated with some of them and can't wait to see them emerge and be the next best in class lenders.
Yeah, that goes to what you think is the next generation. What does the next generation of leaders look like to you?
It's such a great question. I think unquestionably, they're going to have a sense of how to use branding, social media, and marketing to their advantage. Yeah. And they're going to learn how to communicate with the consumer directly. I think whereas this business used to be, a great deal of it used to be direct to consumer. Direct to consumer has always been in vogue when rates are down, out of vogue when rates are up. But I think we're entering a world now where it's going to take over eventually and be the predominant precursor to a mortgage, where people go online. I feel like Google is getting phased out in the mortgage industry. People of my generation, we would go to Google and hit low fixed rates. Whatever came up, we'd follow that. But the generation that's bubbling up now, Gen Z, and to a lesser extent, the late stage millennials, that's not how they do their business. They look at TikTok and Instagram and the little windows that are top of those pages. That is their Google. That is their window shopping. And that's where they're going to go to put house flips or investment property information or how to get a self-employed loan. They click that, they visualize and see the people on the other end of the video, and they start to follow them. And whoever's message, whoever's tendency, whoever's connectivity resonates the most with that consumer is likely going to get a call from that consumer or a click to connect with them when they're ready. And so what's happening is, as a result of this transformation of the digital age, and I'm saying this personally through our influencer division at NFM, which we've driven in 70,000 leads through our 14 influencers that are on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, doing these videos, we're getting to people much earlier on in the funnel. And so it's been the holy grail dream of lenders since the beginning of time. How can I have the leverage in the transaction? Why do I always
have to? That's a really good point.
Yeah. Why do I always have to rely on the real estate agent to give me the lead? You asked me what the leader of the future looks like. They're going to have in their playbook is going to be a serious emphasis on social media and getting to the first time home buyer and educating them through videos and reels and things like that.
Yeah. And doing it at the earliest stage. I think one of the best stories that I can share with, and it's directly to my family, my youngest daughter went to Baylor. Every girl that's going to school is looking forward to the day that she's going to get married and what's my house going to look like. And they're dreaming on Instagram and they're liking different things. There was a lender that is really good at this, connected with her and started watching what she liked, started looking at that, commenting on it, and developed a relationship with her while she was in college. She then met the guy that she married. They just gave us our first granddaughter. And guess what? She went to that person that she had been communicating with. They ended up not getting the loan through them, but went to them first because of the relationship that person had built through Instagram, communicating, oh, I like that too, and was really a resource to her. Now, it turned out that she ended up going for other reasons with another lender, but the fact that they were there gave me so many insights into what is going to be working for the future. It's these kind of stories that we got to start telling. Last night, Greg, I'm watching AI. I'm seeing the power of AI. ChatGPT, generative AI is really coming on strong and how it can have such an impact and how we communicate. That's another whole podcast that I want to get on and talk about, especially when you're talking about these things. It is the future. And unless we can start getting on these social media platforms with tools like ChatGPT in the background, it's going to make such a difference in the way this next generation works. It's amazing. Well, you leverage.
I actually posted about ChatGPT. This was a post that I made maybe 2-3 months ago where I made the statement that ChatGPT is not what the industry should fear right now. ChatGPT is not going to replace the relationship between the agent and the consumer. It's right. going to help make the process a little smoother, but that's not the fear that administrative people should be worried about. More largely, the argument I made is they should worry about companies farming those things out overseas.
Right.
Because you can get LPs and LOAs and processors and underwriters for a tenth of what it costs here domestically. And to me, that's a much bigger elephant in the room than AI to the mortgage industry.
Yeah, we can go on and on about that. It's so good to be with you, and I'm so excited to work with you. There's so many stories that I want to get transferred out to the industry. And you're a great storyteller as a journalist and being trained as a journalist. So I'm looking forward to working with you, Greg. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. How can people reach you? I know they can, if you put in your Greg's name and S-H-E-R and look, search him on, you'll find him all over LinkedIn. Where else can we find you? And what would you prefer that people go? Is it LinkedIn is your primary?
You can find me in Northern Virginia at Starbucks every morning at about 7 a.m. That's where you can find me. But if you're not willing to do that, LinkedIn is the best bet. And I'm on there all day. I'm obviously doing a lot for our company and helping to run it, but I'm also very active on that. And you can find me on LinkedIn, G-R-E-G-S-H-E-R. And please feel free to reach out, say hello. I'm batting 1,000 on responding to people that reach out to me, and I'm going to continue that.
Yeah, you're doing a great job. I appreciate you doing it. I appreciate you stepping up and being willing to do it. That's the most important.
Listen, I want to just say you said a lot of nice things to me. Today, I just want to say from the bottom of my heart that I really appreciate whatever it is that you see in me, that someone of your stature and reputation would take the time out to want to put me under your wing. I'm all in.
As am I.
I'm willing to listen. I'm willing to work harder. I'm willing to get better. I'm willing to be a student of this business. And I appreciate your effort and the fact that you're pouring into me like you are. So thank you.
Well, you're welcome. It's an honor to do that because I get to look at the future legacy of our industry, and I see it in you, Greg. It's a real honor to have you here. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Licken on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Licken of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.